on. Let me stick that in your pocket.
Can you hear me? No. I can hear me now. I certainly want to thank the elders, Mike and Randy, the deacons, all of you, for having me for this invitation, for your great encouragement in my work. Your support is financially is extremely appreciated, spiritually even more so. Let me just say real quick to, I want to thank Scott and Sarah and their children, Randy and Terry, for hosting me, so very kindly and lovingly. Very much appreciated. I bring greetings from my wife, Michelle, from my children, Jack and Deanna, Philip, Heather, and Lucy. Jack is 20, Deanna is 18, Philip is 16, Heather is 14, and Lucy is 5. Lucy was our surprise. I was 47. It was a huge surprise. Although I found out yesterday Paul Sheehan and his wife are having a baby, so I don't feel quite as bad as I did. I also bring greetings from my mother and father, Jack and Pat Maddox. My dad's an elder at the church in Jordan, Ontario, near Niagara Falls. I grew up about 20 miles from Niagara Falls in that little town of Jordan, actually Jordan Station, a suburb of Jordan. I bring brethren, greetings from the brethren at the West End where I preach. Also, I'm in pretty constant contact with brethren in the church in Bundaberg, Queensland, Australia. They asked me to send their greetings to all the brethren here as well. My very good friend Matt Paczynski and brother, who actually now is worshiping with Steve in Hamilton, asked me to give his greetings. And Mark Copeland said, be sure and give his love to all the brethren here. Mark and I first met in 1994 when I moved to Florida. And over the years, Mark has become the big brother I never had. And I love him dearly. And as Proverbs 18:24 says, there's a friend that sticks closer than a brother, and that's Mark. He's been such an encouragement to me for many years. I need to give a big thanks for the heads up to my hosts about how to properly pronounce Nevada. I will not say the way we pronounce it, which is the word which must not be said, but I didn't realize it was pronounced Nevada, but I'm glad you gave me a heads up and I won't be killed for saying it the wrong way. Now I'm gonna begin with and how long do I have? Till half an hour. Okay, we'll do what we can. I'm gonna give you a little test. I think it's a pretty simple test, but who knows the population of Canada? And if I've already told you, don't say. How many people live in Canada? The great huge nation right to the north of you. Somebody guess. Pardon?
45 million.
No, lower. I'll tell you. 36 million people, yeah. 36, so you're between you two. 36 million people. Pretty good. When did Canada become a country? You need to get back to your school boards and say, we need more Canadian education. 1867. Who was our prime minister? I can tell you all your presidents back to the day I was born. Justin Trudeau. I speak American. My wife's American, so that helps. Justin Trudeau was recently elected. His father, Pierre Trudeau, some of you surely have heard of him. He was his dad. He was a prime minister when I was a boy. How many provinces does Canada have? No, but 13 is a good answer because we have 10 provinces and 3 territories. What province is Toronto in that I live in? Oh, you people. I live in Ontario, and the population of Toronto, I'm not going to ask you. Population of Toronto is a little over 6 million. Now, you remember, Canada has 36 million people. Toronto has 6 million, so 1 in 6 Canadians live in Toronto. Of that 6 million people, more than 50% were born outside of Canada. I am the minority in my city. We have well over 500,000 Chinese immigrants. And from every nation around the world, they are all there. It's an extremely ethnically diverse country. Now, I'm going to give you a trick question. Not a trick question. This is a bonus question. How many territories does the United States have? What was... No, but I heard somebody give an answer a moment ago. What was it? 16. I was shocked. I had to look it up. You have 16, four of which are populated. Four are just islands, or 12 are islands. Now, in Canada, and I'll get to Toronto in just a minute, I'm just going to give you a breakdown of each province and territory and how many churches are in each one. Somebody give me a, just real quick, how many churches do you think are in Canada, faithful churches? 20? Okay. You're pretty close. Northwest Territories, 0. Yukon, 0. Nunavut, which is a new territory, relatively new, is 0. British Columbia has 2, small ones. Alberta has 3. Saskatchewan has 0. Manitoba has 0. Ontario has 11. We're the hotbed. We're the Bible Belt of the country. Quebec has 1. A small work in Montreal that is Spanish-speaking, of all things, not French. The province of New Brunswick has 1. Newfoundland, Prince Edward Island, and Nova Scotia have 0. So we have a total in the country of 18 churches, which for me is just a heartbreaking reality. The church is small. The churches are very, very far apart, generally. I pray to God that there are other faithful congregations that I just don't know about, and hope and pray that there are. Before, you know, in America, the church split back and around in the 50s. It came a little, it took it till about the 60s until there was a big division in the church in Canada. Before that division, there were quite a few congregations, very few afterwards that were sound. It's very discouraging for me because I'll get calls occasionally from people. A woman called me last year. My son's moving to Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Where can he go to church? And I said, well, he's going to have to drive to Calgary, Alberta. It's about probably a 12-hour drive. I wish people would do a little investigating before they decide to accept a place to go to school. I get calls and emails quite a lot, and it's very discouraging to have to tell them there's just nothing. There's just nowhere for you to go that's in that area. But again, I thank you very much for your continued support, your encouragement. It's hard to express adequately how much it means to me. Now, as I've mentioned, when we first moved to Toronto, Toronto's made up of a number of different communities. We first moved into a city called Brampton. The nickname of Brampton is Bramladesh. Most of the people there are from India and Pakistan. Then we moved to Etobicoke. We now live in what's called North York, a predominantly Italian neighborhood. It's very culturally diverse, and the West End congregation that I work with we have 37 members. Of those 37, 28 are Christian. Of those 37, 17 are 21 and under, so we have a really nice young person group. And of that 37, 21 of them are Filipino. So half of our congregation, a little more than half, are from the Philippines. 13 of us were born in Canada. So I'm a minority everywhere I turn in my homeland. In the past, we have had members from South Africa, from Nigeria, from Jamaica, from Ecuador, from Ireland. We have had members from Italy. We have a few, 5 of my family are U.S. citizens, so we have a few Americans in the congregation. We had one brother from Pakistan. His name is Yusuf Mohammed Sheikh. And Yusuf was converted out of Islam. I had a wife and 2 young sons. And for some time, his wife Amber would come with him. Sons always came. Lovely family. But his mother was very much against him converting and put a lot of pressure on Amber, a lot of threats. Yusuf was physically assaulted by his friends, his Muslim friends. His car was trashed by his Muslim community. And after a period of time, he just couldn't take the pressure and went and didn't go back to Islam, but he just stopped. He stopped coming, which was discouraging. If we had been able to retain all the members that have come and gone over the years since I got there back in 2005, we'd be about twice their size. But Toronto is a very transient city, and many have moved to work in other places or to retire. One of the nicest compliments that I've ever received in the years I've been preaching, which is about 30 now, was by a brother named Barry Burns. Barry and Maria were with us for the first 5 years I was in Toronto. Barry worked for Canadian Pacific Railway and had been moved there to labor in Toronto for a number of years. Before he left, he said when my family and I moved to Toronto that the little congregation really transformed into a family. And everywhere I've always gone, everywhere I've ever worked, I've always strived to encourage that. It's vital for a congregation to be a family. We're not just friends. We're not just people that we see occasionally once a week, twice a week. We are brothers and sisters in Christ. The church in Jerusalem, we're a close-knit family. The churches that we read of in Scripture, for the most part, were a close-knit, vital family that labor together toward the cause of Christ. And Barry's words really meant a lot to me. And we were very sorry to see him go, but he has diabetes. His eyesight was shot from that. And when they retired, they moved back to be close to their daughter. So they moved back to the Niagara area. Over the years, I've worked a lot with Chinese people in our community, helping them learn English as a cover to teach them the Bible, because I'd always help them to learn English through the Scriptures. I'd have them reading the Bible, and that would always lead to questions. And I won't say that I've had tremendous success in converting them. I've had tremendous success in planting the seed in them, and we've retained friendship. We still see each other, and some of them are, and inevitably what ends up happening is they will start attending a church, but because their English is poor, we have in Toronto a lot of Chinese churches, which I hate, but they speak the language, and they go there, they're denominational, but they notice things, and they see that things are being taught that aren't true, and I just hope and pray that one of these days their English will get better, and they'll come out of there, and they'll worship with us. But we keep encouraging them to do that. I've mentioned that we have a lot of Filipinos, and what happens is a Filipina sister, Canada has offered Filipina nurses the opportunity to come to Canada if they are willing to come for 2 years as in-home caregivers, either for a family with children or a family with older people. If they'll come and stay with them and work with them for a couple years, then they will be granted a resident status. Then they can begin the process of bringing their families to Canada. I know I've mentioned this in some of my reports, but we have a sister named Rose Tolentino who came, I think, in her third year. She was around 2008. She moved to Canada. And her family finally were allowed access to come to Canada in September of last year. It took her 8 years. It highlights the depth of poverty and the desperation in the Philippines. 10% of the Philippine gross domestic product is money being sent home from people that go all over the world looking for work. They just ship all that money back home, and that's what happens with our sisters. It took Rose 8 years. She has a husband and two children. I can't imagine doing that. I've been away from my wife. The longest I've ever been away was 5 weeks, and it was torturous. We have Sister Menchi Cruz. She's been with us for 6 years, and they were that close. Things were going a little speedier for her, but her eldest daughter, Lorelaine, they had to have a physical before they come, and they found a spot on her lung, which was able to be treated, But it's just puts off. They keep having to test month after month, and it keeps getting smaller and smaller. Thankfully, Menchie's sister-in-law is a doctor that lives right in their compound, so she's got all kinds of good care. She just had another X-ray on Friday, and it was clear. Hoping and praying, and I encourage you to pray fervently that means that they can be here soon. I can't tell you how many times Michelle and I have been with these sisters just in tears, and you can well imagine they are so homesick. They are so, they miss their family so much. Yeah, I'm so thankful nowadays that we live in a day and age where there's Skype, and they can see each other and they can talk to each other, but you know it's not the same. And for a husband to be without his wife, for a wife to be without her husband for all those years it's cruel. I think Canada and other nations like America, they need to speed it up. These are good people that are working hard and paying taxes. But that has really contributed immensely to our congregation. All of these, we have a couple of sisters, Miriam and Judith and their brother Victor are members of the congregation. Their father, Elicio Sicat, is a preacher in the Philippines, as is several of their brothers are preachers in the Philippines. Their cousin is Rose, that took 8 years to get her family to Canada, so her uncle is a preacher. Finn and Mimi are a couple other sisters that worship with us. Their dad is a preacher. Mimi's husband, Noli, his dad is a preacher in the Philippines. These are people that grew up in the church and know the scriptures, and it's made for a nice working environment. These are people that know the word. And Menchie's husband, the one who's been there 6 years, her husband is Abraham, is a preacher. And I'm so excited for him to come. Because I'll just back up a little bit. There's been some brothers, American brothers, that were kind of mad at them for coming to Canada. You should stay in the Philippines. The Philippines has hundreds of churches, thousands and thousands of members. We need missionaries to come to Canada. We need him. I need a Filipino-speaking brother that has the gumption to get into the Filipino community, because we've got thousands of them. And many of them struggle with English as they come to Canada, and they're learning English. And I am confident that Abraham will be invaluable, and I can't wait for him to get here. I was so thankful when I went to Australia in September. I also was able to spend 3 days in the Philippines. I had a day layover, and I asked the lady that was helping me with my ticket if she could you make it a few days longer at no extra cost, and she said sure. So I stayed for three, and I stayed with Abraham and his family, and I was so glad to meet them. So excited, they're so excited to come. So please be praying about that. I forgot to mention, Redentor Cruz is another of our members. Redentor's father, Ben Cruz, was a very well-known preacher in Manila for many years, passed away about 4 years ago. It was kind of exciting for me. I was able to have a part in the funeral service through Skype. I did a part of the funeral with all of our Filipino brothers and sisters in Toronto so that we could all see each other and have a part in that. But Dan's father is a preacher, his brothers are preachers. Dan was married to Miriam, another one of our sisters, the one whose father is also a preacher. I know this is confusing, but Den knows the word really, really well. But Den has had a lifelong struggle with homosexuality. I'm about 7 or 8 years ago, Den had a fling with one of our members, another man. Extremely unfortunate. The other man was immediately repentant. And he and I worked it through. Den fled. He didn't leave the city, but he fled the church. Completely cut himself off from us. I'd go see him at work. He wouldn't look at me. He wouldn't talk to me. Finally, Miriam petition for divorce, and I had to go with her to where he worked and serve the papers. And they are divorced. But a couple years ago, Den came back. Oh my goodness, he's good. He's strong. And getting stronger every day. I was telling Sarah and Scott, I need to go away more often because I'm getting, since I left, Dan's sister-in-law, who is Menchie Cruz, whose husband Abraham's coming, they're all related. Redentor just didn't talk to his family anymore. He was so embarrassed. He just didn't talk to his mom. He didn't talk to his dad before he died. He hadn't talked to his brothers and sisters for years. And Friday, Menchie wrote me and said he just was Skyping his family. And it's just beautiful. He's rebuilding relationships. He's preaching for me. I was, back up a bit. There's a church in Peterborough. Peterborough is an hour and a half northeast of Toronto. It's where I lived until I was almost 11. When I did live there, it was a church of 10. There was two families, mine and the Tallmans. There's now a larger congregation there, not much larger. I think they're about 15. But, last year their preacher, Peter McPherson, retired. And so they've got my dad, who's 85. My dad goes there once a month. Another brother, Larry Fuller, from further north, comes down once a month. They asked me if I could come, and I talked to our men, and we agreed once every 2 months. So I go up to Peterborough the fourth Sunday of every second month. And also, we're going to, starting in May, June, I'm going to start going there on at least 2 weeks a month for their midweek service, because they just don't have anybody that can do it. But, and I don't even remember how I got over to that part, but, I know how it was. Dan, when I was in Peterborough last week, which was, Dan taught the class. Dan did the sermon. Dan leads the singing a lot of times. Dan will do anything. I was sick in the winter. I woke up Sunday morning and I was violently ill. I gave him a call. He did it. He's preaching and teaching for me today. He's my right arm right now. And God can do great things. I've seen that in the life of Dan Cruz. I don't think he and Miriam will ever get back together, but they are now cordial with one another, which is a huge thing. Just the fact that they can now talk together again is a wonderful thing. So I'm very glad to report that. Leo Nicolazza, I've mentioned him in reports. Leo has just turned 30. Since I moved to Toronto, Leo has been a challenge. Leo was just recently diagnosed as being bipolar. Not bipolar. I think he is a bit, but Asperger's. Leo has been a struggle. He has times, and let me say this, Leo's brilliant. Leo is a historian extraordinaire. I can sit for hours, and he can talk for hours about church history, about ancient Greek society, and you're just mesmerized. But then he will send me an email that's 5 pages long, that's just one curse word after another. Because he'll just vent on me and vent on me and vent on me. And I've learned just to let him do it. He almost immediately is repentant. He calls me back and he'll call me and he apologizes. But it's been the book of Judges for years. It's up and down, up and down, up and down. That's kind of the nature of the work that we have in Toronto. We have a sister named Elaine. This is another breakthrough I had yesterday. Elaine is the mother of a young girl, 21-year-old named Michelle, who she's hit and miss. She comes fairly frequently, but Elaine is a rock as far as attendance is concerned. She doesn't drive, but she has a 2-hour bus ride each way. She's always there every Sunday, every Tuesday. But her husband's not a member. Randall's not a member. We've had a cordial relationship over the years. But he emailed me yesterday and just was venting about some problems he's having with Elaine. And that was a major breakthrough for me. We're talking about spiritual things. And pray for Randall. Elaine will never get better. She's got an emotional problem that she'll just it's just her cross, and she'll have to bear it. But I hope when I get home, Randall and I are going to get together, and I'm hoping for good things to come from that. Matt Baczynski, that I mentioned at the beginning, who sent his greetings, I came in contact with Matt about 4 years ago. He was living in a kind of a halfway house in Toronto. He's an alcoholic, and he's had struggles with substance abuse for most of his life. His parents divorced when he was young. He took off when he was about 14. He's about 40 now. And while he was in Toronto, he was great. He was bringing his friends all the time. It was just so encouraging, and he was really strong. But Toronto's expensive, and he was going to have to, it was finally time for him to leave the halfway house, and there's no way he could afford to live there. So he moved to Hamilton, where Steve is. Hamilton is much cheaper. It's in a blue-collar industrial city. There's lots of cheap housing. And Dan was able to find himself a place to live with about three other guys that were recovering addicts. And so there was some accountability. And he was able to, for the most part, to stay sober. He had one small fall. Stayed sober for a year. Almost immediately had a small fall, but got back on the wagon. Through all this, Matt and I have constantly been studying together and getting together weekly, even when he moved to Hamilton, which is about an hour away. And but 2 weeks ago, he was able, about 3 weeks ago, he was able to move into his own place, in a nice place. He's lived in a, I don't know if you knew the expression, a dive. He's lived in a dive for the last few years. And he was able, with some assistance, to get a nice apartment, just him, which I was really glad for him. He was really excited, but it's been a challenge because there's no accountability. He hit the bottle 2 weeks ago. We're friends on Facebook. I knew immediately there was a problem because it was just incoherent rambling on Facebook and some foul language. But I was able to spend a lot of time with him. Today is Sunday. On Wednesday evening, he was in detox. I had to go into detox. I was really glad he put himself in there, got himself cleaned up. And he was in there for 5 days. He asked if I could come and get him. So I came and got him out Wednesday morning, spent the day with him. Wednesday night I went with him to his AA meeting. Got him back into that. If you've never been to an AA meeting, has anybody here ever been to one? Okay, got a few that have done it. I encourage you to go. It was an experience, a good experience. I told Matt I'd like to go with him again. He's in several groups that he goes to. It's amazing to see people from all different walks of life struggling with the same addiction. But they were very glad to see him. He was given a credible amount of support by the guys there when they found out the situation he was in. And for now, he's doing well. He wrote me again this morning and thanked me for spending the day with him and getting him back on track. He is worshiping. For the last couple months, he's been worshiping with Steve in Hamilton, a small group. Steve meets Steve bought a building years ago on Ottawa Street in Hamilton, right down from where my dad used to work, and has been able to convert that into a nice meeting place. Steve is there. Matt's there, and I trust that, and I know Steve is being an encouragement to him. Pray for Matt. He's a wonderful man and a good brother. Canada is a hard country. We're very similar in look. Canadians are typically better looking than Americans. No, not really. Not really. That's why I married an American. We've had same-sex marriage in Canada for years. It's interesting. Church Street, downtown Toronto, is the gay neighborhood. And it's quite a large neighborhood. And there are, that's unfortunate, but there's rainbows everywhere when you drive through that part of the town. We have a gay parade in Toronto every summer that brings in well over 1 million. It could be 2 million people attend that event. It's like anywhere else. They are not the majority. They are a small minority, but they're loud. And it's unfortunate, but the world nowadays looks at them as heroes. And they, you know, if you're gay, if you're bisexual, if you're transgender, you're a hero. And that's how they are portrayed in our society. I have a cousin on my dad's side and on my mother's side. My cousin Clifford and my cousin David are both homosexuals. They both live with their partners. Neither of them have married. But, you know, for the most part, my family all just thinks great. Not my immediate family, not my parents, my siblings, but all of our extended family just think they're wonderful. I will say that I love them both. They were favorite cousins of mine growing up. I like their partners. I hate what they do. And they know I don't approve of it. But so we have same-sex marriage that we have to deal with. It's legal in Ontario now for a woman to go topless anywhere and anywhere she wants. I've only ever seen it once. One of my friends saw it one time too, but the summer before last, Jack and I like to go out sometimes and take pictures. And he and I were downtown. We've got a neighborhood called Kensington Market, which is a very eclectic, very hippie, very trendy neighborhood. And Jack and I are walking through this neighborhood, and there's no cars, so we're just going down the street. There's all these people, and here comes this woman, and I'm, she doesn't have a top on. So I quickly veered Jack this way, and Jack never saw her. But nobody cared, at least not to see it. I couldn't believe it. Like America, Canada has changed so much, especially in the last 20 years. We are on a very low point historically as far as the values of a country are concerned. We have a tremendous problem with alcohol. We have a tremendous problem with drugs. We have low crime rate, thankfully, still. It's extremely expensive. I don't know what you pay for rent, but I pay $1,700 a month for the house that I live in, plus utilities. So in the winter, you're looking at typically another $600. So we're about $2,300 a month. We pay 13% sales tax on almost everything. Our income tax is really high. Food costs are really high. I was talking to Scott and Sarah last night. They were talking about there's a Five Guys now here. If I were to take my family of seven to Five Guys, it would cost me $80 or $90 to eat there. Everything's expensive. It's cheaper, you know, it's not much cheaper to go to McDonald's anymore. Everything costs a lot. But having said that, I love my country. And I was very glad. Let me just tell you this. I moved to America in 1994. My wife and I had just lost our first child. He only lived for 5 days. 3 weeks after the baby died, we were given clearance to move to America. I did that not because I wanted to leave Canada, but I was having so much trouble raising support. Nobody knew me. And so Michelle and I decided, we'll move down to Florida. The congregation where her sister was attending needed a preacher, and maybe I can get better known. So, and it worked. It worked wonderfully. But by 1998, I really wanted to go somewhere where I was needed more. There was so many churches in Florida and great preachers and lots of members. And so in 1998, I found out that the church in Waipahu, Oahu, was looking for a preacher, and I knew there were very few churches in Hawaii, so I thought about moving there, ultimately decided not to. And then I found out that the church in Bundaberg, Queensland, was looking for a preacher in 2000. And so as they invited me, I went there and seriously considered moving there, and not even that, I was ready to move there. The government was not ready for me to move there. I was 40, almost 40. I had problems with asthma, which thankfully has gotten better as I've gotten older since then. I didn't have very much money, And it was just strike one, strike two, strike three. It's very much like Canada. We have socialized medicine in Canada. They also do. They didn't want me in their system. And so they wouldn't let me in. And that was quite devastating for me, really heartbreaking. Then I found out a few years later from Terrell Bunting, who he and his father and family had been, were in Norway for many, many years, that the church in Norway was looking for a preacher. And there are only, that I know of, there's only two churches in all of Scandinavia. And my dad's mom was born in Bergen, Norway. My dad's first generation Canadian. So I thought, well, that'd be cool. I'd like to do that and go there. Could learn the language. But as I was thinking about that, Chuck Bartlett called me, who is a fellow Canadian preacher, and said the church in Toronto, the West End, their preacher, David Dan's getting ready to move back to the States. He's an American. What would you think about coming home? And I said, I would love that. I'd love to go back home. It was just, I didn't know where to go, and there wasn't anybody looking, but then there's a chance, an opportunity. And so I came up and met the group there. When I moved to Florida in 1994, there was no church in Toronto. And when I came back in 2005, there was. We met each other, immediately decided there would be a perfect fit. So that's how I ended up back in Canada, which is where I need to be. As I've mentioned, we have 17 congregations in the whole country. A goodly number of the preachers are getting long in the tooth, and they're getting old. I don't know who's going to take their place. Many Canadian men like myself have come to America, and chances are most of them will stay. I've tried to encourage some to come back, but sometimes their wife doesn't want to, and I sympathize with them. It's nice to be in a place where there's lots of Christians. It's nice to be in a place where there's stability. It's hard. It's really hard as a preacher. I just got a text from Mark. He said, say hello to everybody. It's hard to be in a place where you have to raise support. Raising support is a stressful thing. And especially when you lose it. And you got to try and raise it. I've never in my entire preaching career worked in a congregation that was self-supporting. I've never worked with elders. To my knowledge, there's only one church in Canada that has elders. That's where my dad is. And when I was there, they didn't have elders. So I commiserate with those who choose to stay here, and I understand the decision they make. But saying that, there's a desperate need for help in Canada, for support, for encouragement. And so once again, from the very bottom of my heart, I thank you. Does anybody have any questions? I was mentioning to Scott, I'm going to take this from him. He may have mentioned this later, but some people sometimes kind of get discouraged because they've been teaching for a while. I've been preaching for 30 years. I'm waiting for my break. I've always been in small groups. I always am the teacher. My poor wife, and let me just say, everybody's wife is the best wife, but my wife is the best wife. She's an unbelievable woman who would willingly and happily go anywhere. She has adopted Canada as her home. She's in the process of becoming a citizen. But she would live in a mud hut, and she'd smile. She's a rock, and I know I wouldn't be where I am without her. Not many, you know, I've talked to a number of guys about maybe coming to work, even maybe with me in Toronto. And almost always the answer is, well, my wife doesn't want to go north of the Mason-Dixon line. I sympathize, but I hope someday somebody's going to say yes. The church in White Rock, I don't know if anybody's ever been to Victoria. There's a church in White Rock, which is right near the Washington border. They don't have a preacher. They've been using guys from Bellingham, Washington for years to come up and help them. There's just so few guys. I know you all are looking for a preacher as well. I'll be praying for you. It's It's a hard transition. I was really hoping and looking forward to meeting Casey. Is that his name? What's his name? I just kept reading all the great things he was doing. I was really excited. I was sorry to hear he moved. But I hope and pray that you find a man that's a good fit, and I'm sure you will. Anything? Anybody have any? Yes. There, what I say in the pulpit would be considered hate speech sometimes, you know, so there are, but we haven't had any problems with it yet. I'll keep preaching. But it's gonna get worse. You know, we all see the handwriting on the wall. Persecution is coming. I constantly encourage our brethren to prepare for it. I don't want to be the scary guy, but you can just see what's happening in society. You've got this unisex thing, and South Carolina or North Carolina? North Carolina. Where transgenders can use whatever washroom they want. When you open the door a little bit, 1974, I'll just tell you this real quick. 1974, I was 12. Canada was getting ready to have the Summer Olympics in Montreal. And we were short on funds to build all these massive buildings they were building. So our wise government said, we'll have a lottery. We'll do this lottery. It's a one-off thing. We aren't going to keep doing it, but we're going to do this one lottery. And it worked very well. They raised piles of money and they built those buildings and they never looked back. We have countless numbers of lotteries now. I moved to Florida in 94. We didn't have any casinos. I came back in 2005, and there's casinos all over the place in Ontario. And because there's casinos in Niagara Falls, Ontario, Niagara Falls, New York wasn't going to have that. So now there's casinos in Niagara Falls, New York, and it just spreads like a virus. And, of course, you all know all about that. That's the nature of sin. You open the door a little bit, and it just mushrooms. So, you live in a place where you've got your struggles. I live in a place where I've got my struggles as well. I'm thankful that we have each other. Thankful for your prayers. Anyone else? That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Amen. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, amen. Okay. Take a break.